Well, I was an 80s and 90s kid. And so if you grew up 80s and the 90s, there were just some things we didn't have, all right? We didn't have cell phones in our pockets, which meant we didn't have Life 360. So every day was like survival of the fittest. Your parents would say, all right, the sun's out, go. And the rule was, you just got to be back before the sun goes down, all right? That's how it worked. And you know, in the 80s and 90s, that was just a normal thing. You didn't think about where your kid was. You just knew that before sundown, he better get himself back in the house. And so if you weren't good at that, then you had to be really good at one thing and one thing only. You had to be really good at knowing the sound of your mom's voice. Not just knowing the sound of her voice, you had to get good at knowing the tone of the sound of your mom's voice, because that tone communicated different things when you were somewhere living your life outside of the house. And so there was the dinner's ready tone, all right? That was a good one. Very soft, very inviting. There was the you got 5 more minutes tone. And then there was the you better get your butt back in this house or else tone. And you had to be really good at understanding all of those tones. That was your survival as a kid. And so for me, I knew my mom's voice and I knew my mom's tone for a couple different reasons. One is because, you know, all the way up through 10, 11, 12, those first 12 years of my life, that was the most important voice in my life was the voice of my mom. So I knew her voice better than any other voice. And what I knew was that nobody loved me like my mom loved me. So I understood the weight of the tone that she spoke. And that's exactly where we're heading for the back half of Psalm 23 today. Because at its heart, Psalm 23, these 6 verses that David writes to us, Psalm 23 is about learning the voice of the good shepherd. And Psalm 23 asks one question. And this is the question we asked last week, and this is the question we're going to ask one more time. And you got to answer this question before you walk out of this room, because this one question will affect everything in your life. And here's the question. Who is leading your life? You got to answer that. It's not maybe, it's who. It's not possibly, it's yes. That somebody is going to lead your life, and you get to choose who that somebody is. And that is the heart of Psalm 23. Who is leading your life? What I love about these 6 verses is David is not promising you and me an easy life. That's not the offer. But what he is promising is that if we would choose to hear the shepherd's voice, if we would choose to trust him, he will lead us to places that we could never find on our own. That's the promise. And so in the first 3 verses, David took us there. He said he wants to lead us to green pastures and he wants to lead us to still waters. That's where he wants to take us. Last week we talked about he wants to take us to places where we find rest for our souls when they're weary, that we would find righteousness when our hearts are prone to wander. So if there is anything we have learned over the last week, it's that sheep are prone to wander. I think the nicest way that we could say it, and it really is the nicest way, is that sheep are just stupid. All right? They are. They're prone to wander, and left on their own, they're going to get into some trouble. And here's the thing about sheep. Sheep don't just wake up one day and say, you know what? I think today I'm going to ruin my life. That's not what sheep do. Sheep, they don't get lost immediately. Sheep get lost slowly. That as they wander, they get lost and they end up finding themselves in places that they never should be. And the reason why this, the reason why this analogy is so important is because if we're honest, we're the same. We're the same. I'm going to call an audible and get a drink of water. I remember the last time I couldn't get a drink of water, I like was like dying up here and nobody saved me except Jimmy. It was like 5 minutes in and Jimmy bailed me out. Jimmy's always got my back. So the reason why this is important is because we're no different than these sheep. All right? Now listen, I'm not saying that sometimes you're stupid. But I think sometimes we're stupid. Sometimes we just make foolish decisions. And very rarely do any of us just wake up one day and say, you know what? I think I'm going to wreck my marriage today. No one ever wakes up and says that. Very few people says, you know what? I think today's a good day to ruin my life. Today's the day I'm going to walk away from God. Nobody says that out loud, but here's what happens. There's 1,000 small decisions that we make, given to us by 1,000 small voices in our life. And like sheep, not instantly, but slowly, we will get lost. And we will wander. And we will find ourselves in places that we never intended to be. And the reason why Psalm 23 is such a great psalm, the reason why so many of us love this psalm so much, and listen, this isn't a funeral psalm. Okay, it's not. It's a good psalm to read at a funeral. You've probably been to a couple where you've heard it. This isn't a funeral psalm. This is a life psalm. The reason why this is so good for us is because it's honest about life. Because here's what David knows. What's true about sheep is true about us, that sheep, even though they know their shepherd's voice, will still at times find themselves get lost in the valley. Which is why this is what David says in verse 4. He says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I think one of the most beautiful things about the scriptures is that the scriptures are always honest about life. The Bible does not sugarcoat the way that life is. It's very honest with what you and I are going to experience. And here's what David knows to be true. Eventually, following God is going to take you to places of suffering. It just is. And the Bible doesn't try to lie to you about that. It's actually very, very open about how easily this happens. And so what David says here is he doesn't say, if I walk through the valley. He doesn't say if. What does David say? Even though I walk through the valley, which means this. The valley is not a possibility. The valley is a certainty. We are going to walk through valleys. Now let me tell you something that may be helpful or hurtful. I don't know. You are going to walk through valleys if you have Jesus in your life. And you are going to walk through valleys if you don't have Jesus in your life. This is the human condition. We're going to go through some stuff, y'all. And what I'm hoping we can get to by the end of today, if you don't know it already, that if I'm going through the valley, I would rather go through it with Jesus than go through it without Jesus. Because that's what it means to follow God. Following God means there's going to be some dark nights of the soul for you, friend. Following God means there's going to be some heavy moments where you're going to cry out, God, what are you doing? Where are you? And there is nobody better to lead us through this idea than David, because David has been there. Our boy's been through some stuff. If you read the account of his life, David has spent time hiding in caves. He's buried friends. He's lost children. A lot of the Psalms that David writes is David crying out, how long, O Lord? Huh? How many of us, that's been our prayer maybe recently. God, how long? How long am I going to go through this? How long is this going to be a season in my life? And the hope, because there is hope. I want you to know there is always hope. It is always our desire that when you walk out of this room on a Sunday, you walk out of this room with hope in Jesus Christ. The hope in verse 4 is this, that even though we find ourselves in the valley of the shadow, we are never abandoned in the valley of the shadow. That's the hope we have, that we will find ourselves there, but we are never abandoned in that valley. So David, I love it. David doesn't say that he won't be anxious. Doesn't say that. David doesn't say that he's not going to grieve. David doesn't say that he's not going to have questions. That's going to happen. You're going to feel some anxiety in the valley. You're going to have some questions. You're going to have some frustration. David doesn't say he doesn't have any of that. But what David does say, this is really important, what David does say will change the direction of his life. And if we would let it, it would change the direction of our life. David says, I will fear no evil. There will be anxiety, there will be grief, there will be frustration, but there will not be fear. He says, I will fear no evil. Now, despite popular belief, the opposite of faith is not doubt. That's not the opposite of faith. The opposite of faith is actually fear. And here's the reason why. Doubt asks questions, but fear makes conclusions. You see, doubt wonders what's happening, while fear declares, well, this is just how it's always going to be. The problem is not that we have questions. Listen, God can handle our questions. One of the beautiful things about the scriptures is there's a lot of men and women going through some valleys asking some pretty hard questions. The problem is not that you and I have questions. The problem is that we will allow fear to become the loudest voice in our life. That's the problem. That's why the opposite of faith is actually fear. So David, in the middle of this valley, says, I will fear no evil. And David is choosing to boldly walk through the valley of the shadow of death. He says, I will walk through it. I will fear no evil. And it's not because the valley isn't real, because it's real, baby. It's real. He's in it. And some stuff that you're going through right now, it is real. The realest thing you've ever been through. I think we got to always be careful when we're talking to people, because maybe the thing that I'm going through right now, what my valley looks right now, is going to be very different than your valley. But this is the first time I've ever been through this valley. And so one of the reasons why this room is so important, we say this all the time, is that we got to be willing to talk through the valleys that we've been through, because some of us have walked through some roads that some people are walking through right now. And we can give each other some encouragement and hope. And David says, I will choose to boldly walk without fear. Not because the valley isn't real. Oh, it's real. Not because evil doesn't exist, because it's there. And it's not because grief is not crippling. David says, I will walk through for one reason and one reason alone. He says, because I'm not by myself. What does David say? He says, for you are with me. I will not fear, for you are with me. Now, this is like a turn in the text, because for three verses, right? It's only six verses in Psalm 23. The first three verses, David has been talking about God, right? He says, he leads me, he restores me, he guides me. But in the valley, y'all, in the valley, you can talk about all the things you want, but that ain't going to get you out. David shifts, and he goes from talking about God to talking to God. I think one of the reasons why some of us right now who are stuck in a valley are so frustrated and feel so lost is we're still talking about God, but we haven't actually started talking to God. So for three verses, he guides, he leads, he restores, but now our brother's caught up in a dark valley, and he starts talking to God. He says, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. You are with me. He shifts his entire focus. That's what we just sang about. Turn your eyes upon Jesus, right? And the things of this earth will what? They will grow strangely dim. That we have to actually make an intentional turn towards the God of the universe. We have to start talking to him, not just talking about him. And that's what David is showing us. And I think the valley in this moment reveals something that's really important, is that when you're in a season of struggle, most of the time, the greatest gift that God gives you is not answers to why you're in the valley. I know that's what we think we want. Why am I going through this? Why is this happening? That's actually not the gift. The greatest gift in the middle of a valley is not answers to the questions, it's the shepherd himself. That's the gift, is that God actually says, I'm going to give you something better than an answer. I'm going to give you me. I'm going to give you me in this valley. David says, I will fear no evil. Why? For you are with me. And I love this because David does not find comfort in knowing when the valley's going to end, because he doesn't know when it's going to end. That's not in the text. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'm going to be okay because it's only going to be 2 weeks. I'm going to be okay because it's just a year. I'm going to be okay because it's just a bad 24 hours. He doesn't say that. David says, I will fear no evil. Why? Because you are with me. David doesn't find comfort because he knows when the valley ends. David finds comfort because he knows who's with him. He says, I'm going to be okay. Yeah, I can be frustrated. Yeah, I can feel some anxiety. Yeah, it hurts. But I will not let fear determine the direction of my life. I'm going to trust the shepherd, because he's with me. And last week, if you hung out with us, we talked about John 10, when Jesus stands up and gives one of his I am statements. He says, I am the good shepherd. And we connected John 10 to Psalm 23. And we looked at the parallels of both of them, that Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd. And here's what Jesus says in John 10. He says that there is a thief, and the thief comes only to steal and to kill and destroy. He says, but I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd, and the good lays down his life for the sheep. And I don't have it on the screen, but verse 27, Jesus goes on to say, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And one of the reasons why it is so important for us to be in a room like this regularly, to be in circles with other believers, to make sure we're looking at the things that we're allowing influence our life, that it would be things of Jesus, A couple weeks ago, we talked about this. One of the best questions you could ever ask before you consume anything into your heart and mind is it holy? Is it holy? Is this going to make me more or less like Jesus? The reason why we do all that, the reason why we hang out with Jesus so much, is so we can hear and know his voice. All right? So, listen, 12 years of growing up, I knew the difference in my mother's voice between dinner's ready and you better get home. I knew the difference. And we talked about this before, 20 plus years of marriage to Elise. Man, I know the difference between Adam, I love you, and Adam, you better stop right now. All right? Like, I know the difference in the tone of her voice. Why? Because I'm with her. And I also know the difference in the tone of my wife's voice when something's wrong. I know if something's wrong with her or something's wrong with the kids. That I know the tone. It's the same word, but there's a different tone. You know why I know? Because I'm with her. And what David is telling us is that we gotta have the kind of connection with the God of the universe that we can hear his voice and know it when the pasture is green. Because you're going to really need to know and hear his voice when the valley is dark. And that's what he is trying to encourage us to do. Because here's the reality of the world that you and I live in. There are thousands of counterfeit voices trying to lead us to broken places. They just are. That is the agenda of the enemy. Jesus is really clear about it. He goes, there is a thief who looks to do three things in your life: to steal, to kill, and destroy. So here's what that looks like. This is the way the enemy starts to separate the sheep from the flock to ultimately put the sheep in a vulnerable position to where now the sheep's life is destroyed. And this is actually what happens. A good predator that follows a flock knows this. Knows that if I can get the sheep away and isolated. So the first thing that the enemy does is tries to steal our identity. So we've got to be really careful with what we allow to come into our heart and our mind. What we choose to think about and meditate on. Because those thoughts shape our hearts. And what has your mind has your heart. What has your heart has your life. And if you're not careful, you can allow yourself to sit in things that aren't of God and aren't good for you. And it starts to change the way that you see yourself. Starts to change the way that you think about yourself. You know, we always talk about this verse a lot in this room, that God calls us the greatest things that we could do with our life is to love God, right? With all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength. And then what? To love your neighbor as yourself. You know the reason why I think so many of us struggle with loving people? We don't love ourselves. We have such a negative view of ourselves that we don't see ourselves through the filter that God sees us. And there's some things that some of y'all say to yourself when it's just you that you wouldn't allow your kids to ever say to themselves. And so what happens is we start to change our identity. We start to look at ourselves separate from God. We start to look at ourselves differently. And you know what happens once your identity starts to change? Once the enemy has stolen your identity, he starts to kill all your relationships. Isolation is one of the most powerful tools of the enemy of darkness. Because if the enemy can isolate you from healthy people in your life that love Jesus, can isolate you from family that wants the best for you in the name of Jesus, if the enemy can start to isolate you, it starts to kill all your relationships. And then you start to become alone. And now there's nobody to call. And here's the thing. When we stop getting mad at ourselves and we stop getting mad at everybody else, the only person we have left to get mad at is God. And then we start blaming God for all the things that have happened to us, all the people that have hurt us and walked away. When in the end, we talked about this last week, we're the ones that invite it into our lives. We do. Jesus says there are thieves and robbers who are coming to take from you, and they can't get in unless you let them in. And we just willingly open up the door and say, come on in, hang out. And once that happens, once the enemy has killed our relationships, specifically killed our relationship with God, then Jesus says he destroys us and he destroys our life. And this is how sheep die, is they get isolated and then they die. And so I think the reason why some of us are struggling right now in the valleys that we're in is because we are so alone. And that is why here at First Baptist, we are never going to stop fighting for community in this room. We are never going to stop creating circles, places for us to get together and have conversations about life and have conversations about faith so that we could be reminded constantly that we are not alone in this journey called life. And I think the reason why the valley is actually important, because here's the thing about the valley. I know nobody likes the valley. Nobody likes the darkness. But here's the thing I'm hoping for us to understand today. The valley is actually one of the greatest gifts that God could allow into your life. Because here's the thing about the valley. The valley is actually a place of revelation, not abandonment. That's actually what the valley is, right? The valley is a place of revelation. It is not a place of abandonment. And here's what I mean by that. If wealth is your shepherd, and there ain't nothing wrong with wealth, man, you work hard, God's put some cheddar in your pocket, you can take care of some good people, you can leverage that for the kingdom of God. Listen, man, keep working, all right? This not against wealth, if wealth's your shepherd. Because here's the thing, if wealth is your shepherd, I promise you this, in the valley of darkness, friend, you can't buy your way out. You can't. Man, I don't care how many zeros are in that bank account. You cannot buy yourself out of darkness. And maybe for you, health is your shepherd. And again, ain't nothing wrong with being healthy. Hey, big part of my life and some people that I do life with is that we're committed to trying to be healthy, trying to do this thing called life as long as we can, as well as we can. Ain't nothing wrong with taking your health seriously, and you should, unless that's your shepherd. So I'm going to tell you something. If health is your shepherd, in the valley of the shadow of death, there ain't enough yoga and ain't enough broccoli to get you out. There ain't. Some of us know this all too well. You think cancer cares how much veggies you eat? You think cancer cares about your muscle mass? No. So health can't get us out. Maybe for some of us, it's people. And there ain't nothing wrong with loving on people, man. I'm a people person. All right? Room like this gives me energy. Now, I love people, but I'm telling you right now, if people are your shepherd in the valley of the shadow of death, you cannot people please your way out. You can't. The valley is actually revelation, not abandonment. And what you and I need, let me tell you what we need, all right? We do not need a shepherd who is willing just to walk with us through the valley, but we need a shepherd who is willing to fight for us in the valley. Big difference, right? We talked about this last week. There's a difference between a shepherd and a hired hand. And a lot of us have given our hearts to hired hands. And here's nothing wrong with a hired hand until life gets hard. Jesus says the hired hand's there until the wolf comes. And the hired hand says, man, we gone. We out. We don't get paid enough for this. And some of us have trusted hired hands as if they're shepherds. And we have felt the sting of people leaving us at the wrong time. And it's easy to think, well, that's just what God's going to do too. And David says, not our shepherd. He doesn't just walk us through the valley. He says he fights for us in the valley. David says that your rod and your staff, they comfort me. I'm not going to fear any evil because you're with me. And you're packing, bro. You got a rod and staff. And so here's what that means. Actually, in the context of shepherding, a good shepherd had two tools. They had a rod and they had a staff. The rod was used to fend off the wolves. So anybody wanted to try to make a move on one of the sheep, man, they're going to get it. And then that staff at the same time was able to guide the sheep through the rough terrain of the valley. Which means this. We have a good shepherd. His name is Jesus, and he fights for us while guiding us. Man, he's good at multitasking. He can do both, all right? He can do both. Which means this. When you and I are in the dark valley, we don't have to fight on our own. We don't. And when we're in the dark valley, we are not abandoned to figure life out on our own. He says, no, I'm with you. I will fight the wolves, and I will guide you if only you would just listen to my voice, if you would focus on me. I got you. I've been here before. I can get you out if you would just trust me. And so here's the thing. If you are in a valley right now, all right? If you're in a valley right now, and statistically, the odds would say some of us are, all right? If you're in a valley right now, the invitation is stop trying to escape the valley. Some of you are so tired because you are desperately trying to claw your way out of this valley. Y'all, you can't even see where you're going. And you've exhausted yourself trying to get out. The invitation is to stop escaping and to start listening. Listening. We got to get the room real quiet. You got to listen. I think one of the privileges of being a dad is that you have to always be on the lookout for something going wrong. Something going wrong in the house, something going wrong in the car. And I don't know how many times throughout our life with our kids, we'll be somewhere and I'll go, hey, everybody, quiet, 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 quiet. What's that sound? Why is the house making that sound? Why is the car making that sound? And most of the time, it's just this normal thing. But like, that's the joke around the house. And especially now that my kids are teenagers and they're just, you know, a little bit more bold with their words, okay? And so, like, I'll just be doing things, like walking around the house like a ghost whisperer or something, and like, what are you doing? And it's like, Jeremiah's like, Dad's trying to find something broken again. I was like, that's the dad job, right? Because sometimes I'll go, I gotta be quiet. I gotta listen. I think the invitation for us is that, listen, God is trying to say, yo, quiet. Listen. You gotta hear his voice. The goal, and this is really important, the goal isn't to understand the valley. It's to stay close to the shepherd. That's the message right there. That's the goal. Because it's so hard to even understand what the valley is. I don't know how long this is going to be. I don't know why I'm in it. I mean, there's so many questions about the valley, right? That's not the goal. The goal is to stay close to the shepherd. Because when the shepherd is with you, the valley doesn't get the final word. Even though I walk through the valley. I love it. David says, we ain't staying here, all right? This ain't home. We're walking through it. I just want to encourage some of y'all in this room right now. What you're walking through right now, you're walking through by the grace of God. This isn't where you're going to live. This isn't what we're going to call home. Because when you've got the shepherd, the valley doesn't get the last word, which is what David says next in verse 5. David says, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil and my cup overflows. Now, let's go to verse 3 for just one second. I want to go back to verse 3. Verse 3 is the center of this psalm, and it's the center of this whole idea that when David says that God leads me in paths of righteousness for his namesake, he's reminding us that everything God does is for the sake of his name. His name's on it, y'all. It's him, not us. It's his righteousness, not our righteousness. It's his strength, not our strength. Because if it was left to me and you, listen, we would mess it up, and we have done that over and over again. That's why the good shepherd doesn't let the sheep lead. He leads. He says, everything I do is for the sake of my name. And it's easy again to think, well, that sounds kind of selfish. Well, listen, when you can speak the universe into existence and you can defeat death, sin, and hell, then you just get to make the rules, all right? That's the way it works. And so I'm going to trust him. Because if he can do all that, then he can do whatever I'm going through right now. He says, I do it for the sake of my name, which is David reminding me and you that even in our darkest seasons of life, and some of us are there right now, I know it, even in our darkest seasons of life, God is always doing something bigger. He's always working, y'all, always. He's working right now. Even if you can't see it, even if you can't feel it, he's working. And what God is doing in this verse, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. God is revealing his goodness and his glory, and he is showing us his heart. That's what God's doing. He's showing us his heart. Now, when we say the word table and feast, I don't know what comes to your mind, all right? I don't know what kind of parties you've been to or what kind of family gatherings you have. And I know some of y'all, you get a little wild, all right? I've heard stories, okay? Pastor never gets invited to those parties, all right? He just hears about them, and it's okay. There is no judgment, all right? But I don't know what you consider celebrating. But the feast that David is talking about right here, man, this makes any party that you and I have ever been to look like pizza at the bowling alley, all right? I ain't knocking pizza at the bowling alley. But there's parties, and then there's parties, right? That's what David is saying. There is a feast. And you know what I love about this is that when you walk out of that valley of darkness, God's not just handing you a loaf of bread and saying, hey, I hope it gets better. That's not the God that we serve. David is lifting up our head. He's pointing to the good shepherd who doesn't just fight with us in the valley, but he feasts with us at the table. And you know what I love about this? It's in the presence of my enemies. Yo, this ain't no private party. God sets the table out for everybody to see. Man, we're going to party and everybody's going to know about it. You know why? And here's why. Here's why. Because God is not embarrassed that you're his kid. He's not ashamed of you. So he says, when we party big and we party in public. Everybody's going to know how I feel about you. Everybody's going to know that you're my kid. Everybody's going to know the blessing that you have because you are my child. That we got to be careful because the darkest valleys that we walk through, they have a way of shaming us into hiding. Right? Like there are some things that we have walked through without asking for it. And let's be honest, there are some things that we're walking through because we stepped into it. And I love it. No matter what valley we go through, David says, I won't fear. The shepherd's with me. But we got to be careful because there is a way that sometimes you walk out of that dark valley and you're covered in some shame. And you want to hide. And what Jesus is doing and what David's telling us is that when we have this feast in front of our enemies, what he is saying is that at this table, regret and shame and pain, they don't get to exist here. They don't get a seat at this table. Not this table. No. I want everybody to see that I'm not ashamed of you. You are my child. And we know this to be true because God, all throughout the Gospels, is an initiating God, meaning this. God moves towards his people always. God moves towards his people always. That's who he is. Now, one of the best pictures that we could see this more clear than anything else is in Luke 15 when Jesus gives us the parable of the prodigal son. Now, if you've never heard of this parable before, last year we actually did 5 weeks on this. And so it's online. I'd encourage you, if you're looking for something to listen to while you're driving around town, listen to it. We take the whole story. We break it out in 5 weeks. But let me give you the short version in case you've never heard it. Jesus says there's a father and he's got two kids. And the youngest son decides that he wants his inheritance. He wants to go do his own thing. Now, in the first century, the only way an inheritance was split between children was if the dad died. So for the son to come to the father and say, hey, I want my inheritance now. Here's what he was saying. I wish you were dead. I would rather have stuff than you. Now, I don't know how you react when your kids ask crazy things, but I'd go, no, go to your room. Right now, you've lost everything. You know, I'm just throwing stuff in the trash at that point, right? Like, but this father lovingly, graciously gives it to his kid. So he gives the kid the inheritance, and this young kid goes and does what sometimes young kids go do, and he blew it. The Bible says on wild and wasteful living. And he lost everything. And then a famine came through the land, and then he lost even more. And he was in such bad shape that the only job he could get was feeding pigs. And the Bible says that we know it's bad because he's so hungry, he actually wants to eat the filth that the pigs are eating. And then he has this revelation moment. He says, wait a second, my father, he's better than this. I could actually go work for my father. I could be a hired slave for my father and work off the debt. There's no way I can come home as a son, but I know I could come home and be a slave. So the son starts making his way home. And as he's making his way home, he does what every kid who gets in trouble with mom and dad does. He starts practicing the speech, all right? And if you don't know what it means to practice a speech, you just didn't get in trouble right, okay? Because you got to know, what do I got to say? And which parent do I got to say it to so that I don't get in big trouble? And so he's practicing the speech. God, you know, Father, I've shamed you, and I've shamed this family. I can't be your son. Hire me on as a slave. And as he's making his way home, Jesus says that he can't see it, but his father sees him. And the father runs towards his younger son. He's running towards him. And by the time the son looks up, the father catches him and embraces him. And here's what's beautiful about the moment. He doesn't even let the son give the speech. Son starts to talk and apologize for everything. And the father covers up his mouth. He says, shut it. He goes, give me a ring. Give me a robe. Cook up some steak. Man, we're going to party. And he throws the biggest party. Because his son who was dead is now alive. And I love this story that Jesus tells. Because this is the heart of God towards us, his children. That God delights in us. And so to help prove this point, David actually paints two pictures in Psalm 23. Look at what David says. You anoint my head with oil and my cup overflows. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Now, this is significant. So in this time period, they would actually pour oil over the heads of kings and priests and honored guests. They would actually take oil and pour it over their head. And it was symbol. It was a symbolism. And this actually happened to David. When David was anointed as king of Israel, there was oil poured over him. And it was a symbol of blessing and favor and belonging. David says that the good shepherd God pours oil on our heads before we sit at this table, because he says, you belong here. You're my child. Regardless of where you've been, what you've done, you're mine. And there's other significance to this oil. Actually, in shepherding, a good shepherd would pour oil over the head of a sheep. And the reason why was because sheep were prone to get attacked by bugs and insects. And sometimes they'd get inside the ear of a sheep and they could create some serious problems. There's actually cases where a sheep will get bugs in their head and they'll actually smash their head against rocks trying to get the bugs out. I've actually seen sheep kill themselves over this. And so when a good shepherd would pour oil over the head of a sheep, it would actually cover the ears of the sheep and protect their ears from the outside things getting in. David is saying that this is the God that we serve, that when we come to the table out of the valley, he cleans us up, he covers us with oil, he says, you belong at this table. And then he covers our head with oil so that nothing from the outside would get in. He pushes it out so that all that we could hear is his voice. And then he says that my cup overflows. Now, an overflowing cup meant something. If you were sitting with the king, having a meal, this is actually pretty great. And maybe this is a practice we should bring back. Because, you know, we all have people that we love, but they hang out a little too long at the house, you know. It's like, geez, it's 1 a.m, I think, you know. Side note, I had friends like that. Love them beyond anything. Elise and I actually got in our pajamas. and they still just hung out. So I don't know what that means. But if you're hanging out and somebody's in their pajamas, it's time to go. All right, it's time to go. But here's what I love about this analogy. If you were sitting with the king would have somebody who would pour the drinks. And the level of your drink was indicating on how the king felt about you. This is great. So if the king was like, all right, it's time for you to go. I'm done talking to you. Your cup would be empty, and it would just stay empty. So someone would come around, they fill all the cups up, but they wouldn't fill yours. You'd be like, all right, time to go. King does not want me around anymore. But, if the king enjoyed your presence, and he did not want you to leave, he would tell his assistant, you keep that cup flowing. Overflow that cup. And you'd be like, I've had enough to drink. No, more. And what David is saying is that we have a good shepherd who says, hey, overflow the cup. I don't want you to leave. I want you to be with me forever. That's what David is saying. And so I say all this to say this. Valleys eventually give way to feasting. All right? I'm going to speak some hope into you right now. If you're in a valley right now, I'm going to tell you, hey, valleys eventually give way to feasting. All right? And that's why it's important to sit in circles. It's why it's important to share our testimony, because some of you all have had some pretty good feasts after some pretty hard valleys. And there's some of us right now who are in a valley right now, and we don't know what it's like, and we need some people to wrap our arms around us and say, hey, a feast is coming, friend. It's coming. You're not going to live in this valley. You're walking through this valley. And at the end of it, there is a feast waiting for you. And that feast is going to look different for all of us, all right? Some of us, a feast is a nice medium rare steak, Outback Steakhouse. You got to have it medium rare. If you do more than medium rare, just order chicken, okay? Because you've ruined the steak, all right? All right, some of us, hey, that feast is a medium rare steak at a good restaurant. Some of us, that's a Big Mac at McDonald's, all right? Like, there's different seasons in the Myers household where a Big Mac is just as good as an expensive ribeye. You know what I'm saying? And there's going to be seasons in your life where that feast is going to look different. But the feast is coming. That's the promise. The valleys eventually give way to feasting. That's why Jesus says in John 10, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. That's the promise. Not maybe, not sometime, now. He says, I'm life now, right here, right now for you. life and life abundantly. And I think the tragedy for so many of us in this room, the tragedy is that we will spend our entire lives trying to earn what Jesus has already given us. So that story of the prodigal, there was two sons, right? One son wasted the living, the other son stayed home and worked. And so Jesus says that this son's out in the field working hard for dad, and he's it's one of those moments, he's like, everybody quiet. What am I hearing? It sounds like a party. Is there a party going on at home? And when he gets home, there's a party. It's crazy. And you know it's crazy because they killed the fatted calf. Man, everybody's eating prime rib. And then he looks in and he sees his brother, the one who did all the wrong things, the one who wasted the inheritance. And you know what the brother does, the older brother? He said, I'm going to show dad. I'm going to pout. I'm going to hang out here with my arms crossed. I'm not going to come into the party. And the father doesn't just run to the prodigal son. He runs to the religious brother. And he says, hey, come inside the house. Come in. Celebrate. Your brother was dead and he's now alive. And some of us, we do that. We, for whatever reason, we decide to sit outside the party. That here's the table. Man, the spread is good. And for whatever reason, we choose to just sit outside and go, I'm not doing it. I'm not going in. I'm not doing it. And here's the thing about the gospel. The gospel is not an invitation for me and you to work harder. The gospel is an invitation to come inside and eat. Man, eat. There is more than enough food. Come and eat. And maybe the invitation for us today. Maybe the invitation for you and me is that you and I would stop rehearsing all of the reasons why we don't belong at the table. Maybe for us, the invitation is we would stop listing all the mistakes that we've made. Maybe we would stop telling God why we shouldn't have any food at the table, right? Because here's my guess. Some of us got a little older brother in us. Some of us got a little younger brother in us. Both are pushing us away from the feast that the Father has prepared. And here's the thing. The shepherd knows, man. The good shepherd, he says, I know my sheep, meaning this. The good shepherd, Jesus, he knows where you've been. He knows what you've done. And he knows who you are. He knows all of that. You know what's crazy? Knowing all that, you know what he says? Yo, this seat's for you. This seat is for you. This is your seat. Come eat. And I think maybe in love, what some of us need to hear today, all right, I say this in love. Stop trying to earn your seat. Shut up and eat. Huh? Well, Pastor, that was offensive. Let me tell you what's offensive. You look at the God of the universe who by his grace and by the laying down of his life has prepared you a seat at the table, and you go, I don't think I'm worthy enough for that. I don't think what you did for me can cover the things I've done to myself. That's disrespectful. So shut up and eat at the table. Come be a part of the party. That is the invitation. And so we close out with this. David's last line. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. If you could boil down the 66 books of the Bible into a phrase, can I tell you what that phrase would be? God with us. That's it. Listen, I just saved you a lot of money going to seminary, all right? There it is. We can summon God with us. So when God creates man, he grabs a handful of dirt and he breathes his life into it and he makes Adam and then he pulls a rib out of Adam and he creates Eve and he hangs out with him in the garden. You know what that is? God with us. And in Exodus, when God sets free the Israelites out of the bondage of slavery and he walks them through the wilderness through a cloud by day and fire by night, you know what that was? God with us. And when he set up the temple and his presence filled the Holy of Holies, you know what that was? God with us. And thousands of years later, in a town called Bethlehem, when the God of the universe stepped into human flesh, Emmanuel, God with us. And when Jesus left this earth and he sent the Holy Spirit to indwell in the heart of man, you know what that is? God with us. And I was hanging out with my brother, Terry, this week. And Terry looked up at the sky and he says, I wonder if that's it. And I didn't know what he's talking about. He says, I wonder if that's the cloud that he's going to come riding back on. Because there will be a day when Jesus splits open that sky and he unites heaven and earth once again. And you know what that is? God with us. That's the gospel. Not just a God who saves, not just a God who forgives, but a God, get this, who actually wants to be with you. That's the promise of Psalm 23. And David says that his goodness and his mercy, it will follow us all the days of our life. That this is strong language. What this is saying is that goodness and mercy is chasing you down, friend. The goodness and mercy of God is chasing you down. And if you could just stop, if some of you could just stop long enough to let it catch you, it would drastically change your life. It would drastically change your life. That what we know to be true about the prodigal son would be true about us. That the moment we stop running and the moment we turn around to finally say, all right, I don't know how to get out of this valley. I'm lost. And the moment you turn around and say, man, I don't even know where to begin to find him. I hope he can hear when I call out. The moment you turn around, what you will find is a Savior who is already running towards you. He's running right towards you. He's always running towards us. His goodness and his mercy follow us. And David says, and then we shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Forever. That the point of this psalm is to stir our hearts and affections for the presence of Jesus. Because deep down, do you know what our souls desperately need? God with us. God with us. And so today, that is the reminder. That's what it is. It's a reminder that you're not alone. No matter how dark the valley is, no matter how messy it feels, the goal is not to understand the valley. I wish I had something better for you. I wish I had something that I could just say and it could take all of that away. But actually, I do. It's not an answer. It's a person. The goal is to be close to the shepherd, to hear his voice, to trust him, and to know that the valley always gives way to a feast. And when we eat, man, we eat. And we were reminded once again that his goodness and mercy will always be there, and I will dwell in his house forever. Let me tell you something I learned 6 years old. That got me through a lot of scary nights alone in a dark bedroom. If Jesus is in the room, we're gonna be okay. And Jesus is always in the room.